Okay, motherfucker!
What are you looking at, sir?
I'm looking at you, miss.
Run that, baby.
I'm not the Zodiac. And if I was, I certainly wouldn't tell you.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Imprint Companion. Yes, this is the podcast co-hosted by me, Blake Howard, where we discuss, we unpack, we unbox everything from the boutique Blu-ray label Imprint Films from right here in Australia. I'm talking a very special release one of our upcoming Imprint matches, a 4K release, and I'm not talking with my normal co-host, Alexi Toliopoulos. Today, I'm talking to the author of a brand new booklet, inside the In the Heat of the Night 4K UHD limited edition hard box. It is my dear friend, the host of Increment Vice, the author of the upcoming definitive Brian De Palma book, Man About Town, Rapscallion, Travis Woods.
Rapscallion? Well, you don't hear that a lot. Is that still popular in Australia? They throw that one.
It's popular in my house, as I said. It's like I don't judge. I just like that word, rapscallion. When I look at you,
rapscallion. Yeah. Okay, I'll take it.
I think about that. But no, very excited to talk to you. This is another, like, Imprint has seemingly gone from very focused on Blu-ray now. A lot of 4K coming out in all of the different batches. This is in a stream of batches that are coming out at the moment with getting 4Ks. We've just had a 4K Raging Bull, and there's going to be 4K Malcolm X, and now we've got In the Heat of the Night. I would love if you could talk to me, my friend, about the Academy Award-winning In the Heat of the Night, Norman Jewison's amazing film, Sterling Siliphant, Rod Steiger, of course, Sidney Poitier. Tell me about what, when this was on the slate, what made you pull out the pen and start bleeding on the page as you do so beautifully?
Oh my God, just so hyperbolic, so beautifully hyperbolic. Thank you, Blake. First off, I'll go in like car salesman pitch mode. I just want to say, first off, this box set, I'm very, very, very proud to be a part of it, because this is a truly, you know, we hear this kind of talk about a movie sometimes and you imagine it's a dusty, boring old thing. But this is a truly galvanizingly important American film. And it is not a boring one by any means. It is not a lesson movie by any means. It is a really thrilling, excited, hot-blooded piece of detective genre work. And I adore it. I'm so proud to be a part of it. And I also want to say really quickly, there's only 1,500 of these special limited edition boxes available. And also, for people who are thinking about buying it, and maybe they're going to be a little snippy and be like, well, why don't I just get a different 4K release? Because this is not the first 4K release of the film. What I will say is, this is the only 4K, this get a little technical, that is in Dolby Vision, or what is called HDR10. Without getting into the boring technical details, all that basically means is this is the only 4K UHD edition of In the Heat of the Night that actually takes advantage of the 4K UHD process and is actually the best looking, the fullest looking. This is the only home video version of the film that actually utilizes 4K/UHD technology to the its furthest extremes, and so by definition, this is literally the best looking home video version of this amazing film that you're ever going to get. For that alone, if you're a film fan, if you're a detective noir film fan, if you're a 60s film fan, just a fan of American movies in general, this is the version to get. And on top of that, what I love so much about this film is that it, you know, it could really easily be a boring message movie that really hits you over the head, taking place as it does in the deep American South in the 1960s, when there appears to be a possibly racially motivated murder, or at the very least, the very racist Southern police force investigating it wants to make it racially motivated and find the killer of a rich white man and is dead set on making sure that the person they arrest is black. What I like about this film, and one of the reasons I so quickly glommed onto it, both as a film fan and glommed onto the opportunity to write about it, is as I put in my essay, this is not a lesson movie. This is not a moralizing lecture movie, which can be some of the most boring shit in the world. This is instead a movie that, as I say, uses it's this incredible cataclysmic genre work that uses the police procedural framework and structure not to investigate a murder, but to investigate the mystery of the American South itself. How the American South was formed, created on this crucible that is based upon America's original sin, which is the kidnapping of slave labor across the Middle Passage and funneling them into America. That is America's original sin, and that is a this gaping opened wound that continues to bleed into the country. This poisoned and infected wound. And it's a film that really, really tries to use this murder investigation as a metaphor for investigating the South and asking why this particular region is so suffused with racial tension and racial hate and racial fear and racial bigotry. And it does so with these incredible characters, most especially the character of Virgil Tibbs, played by Sidney Poitier, this murder detective who literally is just passing through this small town.
He's
He's just
literally
waiting for a
visiting,
goddamn train.
he's waiting for a train, he's visiting family. He wants to get the hell out of there. He knows he doesn't belong there. That's a beautiful touch. I've actually gotten, I've watched this movie a
He
few
wants
times
out of there
recently.
so fast.
He's
He
just
won't
like,
even step outside the train station. He knows better. Like
yeah,
he's
he
just
doesn't.
waiting for this train at 4 a.m., just trying to get the fuck out of town.
He loves that, and he just wants to get out of there, which I love so much in the movie. And then I love all of the different sequences and series that unpack, as you said, like they kind of inspect and interrogate these different aspects of this wider original sin, whether it's, Steiger kind of bullishly getting Virgil Tibbs and like arresting him for withholding evidence. The amazing and terrifying scene where Virgil is chased by a bunch of hicks down a road into a factory. Virgil going out himself, like stalking the night and doing like solo investigations. Virgil going to the different sites of the things, interviewing people, watching reactions from wives and mothers when they're trying to, pin it on wrong, falsely accused people. It's just every single one of those. The how seamless they beautifully integrate together, I really think is you capture so perfectly, and it helped me sort of harness that point, which is like it's all these different fractured component parts of this overall essay and interrogation that's happening. It's really
Yeah, and
beautiful.
it's an incredible film. And just really quick for anyone who hasn't seen it, and I know sometimes older movies from the late 60s, it's easy to skip over some of these movies. You assume they're going to be kind of creaky, and moralizing and in a insulting, we are the world kind of way. But this really is. It's a really thrilling noir, neo-noir detective thriller, and essentially it's about this black detective who's just passing through this southern town waiting on a train. A rich white man is murdered, and the greatest actor who ever lived, Warren Oates, plays a deputy cop who happens to see this black guy sitting in a train station, doesn't know who he is, so just immediately arrests him for the murder because it's the only black man in town, so he just assumes this is the killer. Not knowing he is arresting one of the great homicide detective minds of America in the form of Virgil Tibbs. And very quickly the film becomes this kind of this fricative struggle between these two tectonic plates in the form of Virgil, this black detective, and Chief Gillespie, the very white and very racist police chief of the town, played by the incredible Rod Steiger. Essentially Virgil gets tasked with solving the murder in this the most unique kind of ticking clock kind of way, which is he's arrested for the murder. And now very quickly, this is not super spoiler, I don't think. It happens very fast in the film. As soon as Chief Gillespie realizes, oh shit, we've arrested a cop. This guy clearly is not my killer. It still puts Virgil Tibbs on this weird ticking clock that I don't think we've seen in almost any other detective film, specifically because of the race issues in this film, in that Virgil is they call Virgil's police chief, they confirm that Virgil's a cop, and then Virgil's police chief just kind of volunteers him to like, hey, well, while he's there, you know, he's the best we've got, why don't you
utilize
use
his
him?
services.
You utilize his services. And so even in this manner, this black man's agency is kind of taken from him, and he's told, go to work in the South, solve this murder. And that is so rife in and of itself with so many issues. But the thing that's kind of interesting is, you know, you get a lot of detective movies that have a ticking clock, whether it's Dirty Harry, where there's a girl buried underground and she's losing oxygen, and Harry's got to, you know, solve this, or he's got to get to the school bus full of kids or whatever, or there's a bomb somewhere. The unique ticking clock of this film is the ticking clock of Southern hate and rage, in that the longer Virgil is in this town trying to solve this murder, the more and more his life becomes at risk. Because essentially, this is at a time and place where the townspeople of this town have no qualms whatsoever about murdering this man, and just assuming he
Regardless of his station
doesn't
in
matter if he's a
society.
cop or not, doesn't matter, we don't care. All we know is he showed up the same time this rich white man died. That's all we need to know. And we don't like that he's going around throwing accusations, backhanding our plantation owners, which happens in one of the most galvanizing scenes in the film. And so
And
the
also
very
the
hot.
sorry, Trav, just to tag on the slap, also featured in a terrific documentary which is on here called The Slap Heard Around the World.
Slapper, yeah. Where audience, the filmmakers would go watch this movie with black audiences, and they would know that they were with a cool audience if the audience hooted and hollered and cheered when Virgil backhands this plantation owner. Back to it, yeah, he's on this film by its very nature is able to have the most haunting and disturbing and urgent ticking clock of almost any detective film you're ever going to see, which is he's not even trying to save somebody. The somebody's already dead. He's got to solve this murder to save himself from the South, because the South is literally going to rise up and murder him if he stays in this town one day too long. And so you have him frantically going around dealing with, you know, this, you know, all manner of Southern characters, good and bad, helpful and not helpful. Some, you know, giving some of these actors giving some of the performance of their lives, like the volcanic Rod Steiger. Warren Oates does incredible work as just this kind of jackass hit cop, and I will never not take a moment to appreciate my beloved Warren,
Oh no,
the greatest actor who ever lived.
he's so good. He's so well pitched in this movie, and
At just
he
playing that kind of guy,
just
that kind of guy.
and ex exactly that this, but he has depth underneath it. It's like you firstly think
Yeah.
he's completely dim, and then you realize, oh no, he's quite canny, and he can maneuver his way through a situation, and you're watching him cover his tracks for a couple of sort of, I think, things that he think are deeply sinful, things that he's doing that are going to reputationally damage him in this very small insular fishbowl of a town. And so I think that as the movie opens, he opens. And yeah, you know, I know how much you love Warren Oates, so I was giving
I
him a
do.
particular
I
look
do.
when I was preparing to
Bless your
talk to you
heart.
about it.
Bless your heart. Not the biggest Warren role, but he gives it his all, and he lattices it with a level of depth that I don't think just anyone would have given to that minor a role. But yeah, it's a deeply, more than anything else, it's just a really incredible and exciting film. It's an exciting neo-noir. More than anything, I think that, and I think this is where this film succeeds, is that its first duty is to entertain. And its first duty is to tell an exciting and thrilling and novel tale. And in doing so, and incorporating the subject matter that it does, it actually tells a story of incredible meaning and meaning and humanity and depth about one of the darkest aspects of this very dark country. And I do think that if it had done the inverse, which the book upon which it is based kind of does, where the book, no offense to its writer, John Ball, the book in its weird way tries to be so liberally not racist that it actually bends in on itself and becomes racist, where the character of Virgil Tibbs in the book is so perfect that he actually falls into that very unfortunate quote magical Negro end quote trope of this person isn't even a human being. It's this person is just this absolute figure of perfection that can do no wrong. He is a hyper genius detective who also knows kung fu, so you can't fight him, you can't outthink him. But in doing so, he's not, but that robs him of personhood, that robs him of agency, and that robs him of any kind of uniqueness. He, in trying to make Virgil so perfect in the book, it actually robs Virgil of his humanity, just as Virgil would be robbed of humanity by the Southern hicks who are chasing him. And what I like about the film, and I like about the screenplay by Sterling Siliphant, and what I like about the changes that were insisted upon by the brilliant actor Sidney Poitier was no, let's make him flawed. Make him make mistakes. Make him want the killer to be a racist white guy because he hates racist white guys. So there's this unique
And
the
even
uniqueness of
he's
this adaptation is that he is as deeply flawed as the men who are trying to kill him. He just happens to also be the smartest person in the room, but he's still this uniquely deeply flawed human being. Racism has damaged him as much as it has damaged the white people around him. And that's an incredible thing to watch, and it creates an incredible amount of tension that you don't get in just the usual neo-noir murder mystery.
No, it's you're so right there. I love that there's like an electricity because he wants it. It's almost right at the in the preliminary parts of his investigation, he almost so desperately wants it to be a white cop just to almost show like it's the institutional racism. He almost wants it to be that, and then he even wants it for he's like it's sort of like it tips from a white cop, and then you see his gaze pivot to like this model member of white society, rich person in town, and then he's like laser focuses on that, and it's like with each time that his gaze kind of like Lord of the Rings Sauron style like casts all this light on someone, you can tell that that comes with its own level of animosity and prejudice as well, but it's only as a
From a
result
deep
of
place of hurt. Yeah, from
yes,
a
it's
deep
only
place
as
of
a result of
hurt.
all the pain that he's been inflicted upon his
Yeah.
situation. So no, it's a really special movie, and it doesn't ever get tired, and it feels extremely modern.
Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're crushing morning miles or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.
Yeah, that's the other thing is when you watch it, I had not watched this for several years, more than so. I don't think I've seen it since college. And so, when I was rewatching it, when I got hired for this gig and I was rewatching it, sometimes you watch movies for work, even if they're great movies, and it becomes work. Like it's like, okay, I gotta watch this, gotta make my notes. Poor me, God, I sound like I'm working in a coal mine. But yeah, sometimes you sometimes when you're watching movies for work, it does become inherently less fun because now I gotta pay attention to this. I can't just kick back with popcorn and a drink. But I gotta say, this is one of the more fun, as weird as it is to call a movie like this fun. It is, it's a fucking yarn. It's a yarn. It's a fun neo-noir yarn. It's a thrilling, enjoyable movie to watch. It somehow folds these incredibly complex and dark and complicated and just depressing and heart-busting themes and scenarios and histories into what is an incredibly thrilling popcorn film. And it's a cop movie where you can actually like the cop, which is rare. You get to hate all the other cops, but you get to like this one cop, and that's at least something. Yeah, it's an incredibly entertaining film. Like I think we forget again because of its perhaps because of its age and because it is, I think a lot of people, if they know it, they know it because they've seen the clip of like, what do they call you, back where you come from? And he's like, and Virgil's like, they call me Mr. Tibbs.
So badass.
Because the police chief of the small town keeps calling him various racial slurs, or using his name in a very calling him Virgil, but in a very insulting way, like, Virgil, what a name. But what do they call you back home? And when he just explodes, they call me Mr. Tibbs. That is such. It's, I think it's easy to almost become deadened to that, to desensitize to that. Like, okay, we know the big moment that the T. The Turner Classic Movies 50 best scenes of all time type list thing,
They call me Mr. Tibbs.
and what's great is that's like the 50th most memorable thing in this movie. I note in the essay that there are so many other moments that are almost more galvanizing the more you watch the movie. I use that word a lot tonight. I don't know why I'm saying galvanizing so much, but it's a galvanizing movie. But there are so many other scenes like that that have those moments, those lines like that, and it's that are just as shocking and important as Virgil backhanding a plantation owner, or Virgil saying to a police chief, "No, they call me Mr. Tibbs. I'm a man of respect. I'm a man to be respected.
Yes.
I'm a man. I'm a human." There are so many moments like that scattered throughout this film, big and small, and it truly is. It's truly. It's truly a, just it's we use this word a lot, but it is a masterpiece. It's one of the five films that was focused upon in Mark Harris's book, Pictures of a Revolution. Movies like Bonnie and Clyde, things like that, The Graduate, all of these movies that kind of came out the same year that kind of announced a sea change in American cinema between the old guard and the new. Like these this is one of the movies that was scared the shit out of Rick Dalton in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, because Rick would have realized that the best role he would have gotten in this movie was maybe Warren Oates's. He would have been the rangy, skinny, rangy, hick cop, second from the right. But yeah, this is one of those sea change movies that announced that new Hollywood was upon us, that Hollywood had caught up. Or was catching up. It's always a little behind. It's always kind of glacier slow. But that this is one of the films that announced that Hollywood was catching up to counterculture ideals and ways of thinking and political liberation. And it is, as I said, the filmmakers, and including the two actors that played the Virgil Tibbs and the police chief who kind of hates them at the beginning, Sidney Poitier and Rod Steiger, they would go to screenings together. To go see, they were buddies in real life, and which is very heartening to me. It makes me very happy to know that they were pals, considering what they go through in this movie. And they
Steiger
would
feels like
go,
such a lad. Like,
oh boy, oh he's someone you'd go have drinks with.
oh
He's someone you'd have drinks
my
with.
God.
And
He's
he looks like he was
first
very
choice
familiar with
all-star
the bar.
team.
Yeah. And
Him,
Steiger
Richard
looks like a guy.
Harris.
Yeah,
Yeah,
yeah.
those guys.
You see the gin blossoms on Steiger's nose, and he's a good time Charlie. You're gonna have a fun time with him. But they would go to the movie houses, and he would talk about how he knew the audience was cool. Is like I said, when the plantation, the white plantation owner gets backhanded by this black man, you would either the audience would go dead silent, and he's like, that's when we knew we had an uncool audience, or they would just start hooting and cheering and clapping. He's like, that's when we knew we had a cool audience. And that image just that kills me. But I will say really quickly, for those who have seen it or do see it, keep an eye out. One thing I would say to keep an eye out for is the I think what makes this film special. This is the scene for me that makes this film special, is between those two men, real life friends, not so much friends as the characters they play were not so much friends, but these two cops, there's a moment where they can't figure this murder out. And they know they're almost out of time. Like, it's to the point Virgil can't leave. He can't go outside anymore, for risk of his life. And the chief knows he can't protect him. And they spend a night in the chief's house. It's the middle of the night,
Yeah,
getting drunk,
it's a great scene.
talking about the women they almost married but didn't. And you realize these are two men so beset by loneliness. And I'm not going to get too deep into it, because it's so heartbreaking, and you can almost see them coming to a kind of understanding before it dances out of their reach. But it's the moment for me where the film really does make a case for the Southern problem, the problem of the South, and the intense, bleak, existential loneliness at the heart of the American heart, I think. I'm not saying this is a movie that solves our racial problems. Clearly it hasn't, because of where we are in 2025. But it is a film that is all the more resonant in 2025 because of, I think, that scene. I won't go any deeper into it, but because of that scene, which to me is far more important and powerful than any backhand, far more important and powerful than "They Call Me Mr. Tibbs," these two deeply lonely men almost meeting each other's eyes and admitting to one another why they are so lonely. But and that in that moment, the film brushes its hand against this intense, haunting, gothic loneliness at the heart of the American South that seems to have been the scar tissue, the after effect of America's original sin and how it has compartmentalized and walled off humans from one another and from seeing one another. And it is just, it's a moment of magic, a moment of magic and soul deep aching loneliness that I think anyone who has lived in the South or grown up in the South, on either side of the tracks, on either side of any kind of racial divide, it's something that you recognize very intensely as seeing, as having grown up seeing the adults around you afflicted with this strange stony silence where you can't talk about things that are wrong. You just have to endure them and not change them. And it's a haunting part of the South. And I think it's a film, it's one of the few films that I think kind of captures that, for lack of a better term, that Southern Gothic that haunts the individuals in it, of any part of the spectrum. And it's just one of the many moments that makes this just such a magic goddamn movie, just such a magic goddamn fucking American movie. A great cop movie, a great detective movie, a great Southern movie, just a great movie, great 60s film. And the fact that it's getting the best possible looking version that it has ever had on home video and probably will ever have. It comes loaded with all sorts of cool extras, commentaries, interviews, a big essay, a big pretentious essay by me, if that's your thing. But it is one of those movies that it almost, I think, could put someone off if you tell them what an important American film is. But it is an important American film, one of the important American films, all caps. But more than that, it is just a great yarn. It's a great detective flick. If you love detective movies, if you love neo-noir, if you love ticking clock, sweaty, desperate, I've got to do the right thing or I'm gonna die type movies, it truly, literally does not get better. It does not get better than this movie. Like I challenge someone to think of a better one of this type. It
I don't think there's a better one, but I think that one thing that really resonated with me was when you're like how prescient it still is now in contemporary times. You watch it now,
Oh
and
my
so it
God,
feels just as urgent,
depressingly so.
a depressingly urgent. And I would recommend a double feature of In the Heat of the Night and Jeremy Saulnier's Rebel Ridge. Just go back to
Actually,
that.
yeah, that would be a lot. That's apt. Yeah,
That's a
I was actually
kick
gonna say
that.
Silence of the Lambs, weirdly, but no, not for the racial component, but just because of the ticking clock and whatnot. But no, wow, you're right. This would be a killer double with Rebel Ridge. It'd almost be too much. Like it would be. It's like it's almost overwhelming.
You'd go
It's too much.
you would be like Aaron Pierre, like hunched up, like shaking, like you
Oh
look like
man,
Tom,
I hadn't thought of that.
you look at
Yeah.
like Tom Cruise, sorry, Tom Hanks and Captain Phillips, are you okay? And like Tom Hanks just has that like
You
standing
know,
panic attack as you leave the theater. But
wow,
just
that's
two
in
movies that have hell
the yeah,
yeah, but also are just
that
deep
boy.
root cuts. Yeah.
That's a great way of putting it. It's a movie that has hell yeah, but it really cuts you. You know, if I see Sonny again, I'm going to mention that. I'm going to ask him if he watched this as any kind of research or any kind of thing like that. Because we all love to compare that movie, I think, a little bit to First Blood, the first Rambo film. But wow, yeah, you know, you're right. There's a lot of In the Heat of the Night's DNA
There's three movies when you
in Rebel
think
Ridge.
you said this is like he's home. That's the thing about Tibbs in this movie. He's going home, but he can't wait to escape. And there are three movies that fit that bill. Obviously, In the Heat of the Night. From an Australian perspective, one of my truly favorite films of all time is Goldstone, which is the sequel to Mystery Road, where Jace Wan has to go home. He's actually going home to where his mob are from to conduct this investigation. And Aaron Pierre in Rebel Ridge is going home back to get his
Just trying
brother
to see
out of
his
some
cousin,
shit.
man.
Yeah,
Just,
sorry,
yeah,
his
just to,
cousin, trying to get his cousin,
yeah.
get him out of some shit, trying to get him back on the straight and narrow because he's left there because he doesn't want to be anywhere near that area. And
And
it's
as
all
so
three,
often is the case, there's a
and all
fucking white
three,
cop.
yes. And there's white infrastructure that is there, whether it's systemic, and it's them battling for it. And I think all of those movies almost equally have these like exultant, amazing moments, but they're very grounded and very real. And I, yeah, if you wanted a super bleak trilogy, you could add in Goldstone in there for a little bit of Australian context.
God damn. You
But
save Rebel Ridge for the end, because there's at least a little bit of light at the
Rebel
end of that
Ridge has got to
tunnel.
be at the, yeah.
Save Rebel Ridge for the end. I mean, there is light. There is some light in the heat of the night. I mean, the night does end eventually,
No, it
but
ends.
it's a you know it, it's not a wholly grim film. There is grimness in it though, but it is still a popcorn movie, which is why I think it fits well with Rebel Ridge, because both of those are kind of, they're popcorn films.
Hell yeah, that cuts deep. Hell yeah.
Yeah, hell
You
yeah, that
see,
cuts deep. That's
if
in the
you
heat of the
stumble
night.
on the beautiful and lovely Jeremy Saulnier at a cheeky screening at the American
I'm
Cinematheque.
actually gonna mention I'm gonna mention this to him. I'm gonna
Yeah.
ask if he watched this as any kind of research. And of course, if he says no, then I'll feel like I just accused him of ripping it off, which he did not, but now I'll be
No,
embarrassed if
you
he
just have
said,
to
no, I
recommend the
didn't watch
double
that at all.
feature. Can we get Rebel Ridge
Yeah,
back on
yeah.
the big screen
Oh God,
behind In the Heat of the
I
Night?
oof, yeah, that would be a lot of fun. Oh boy, yeah, that's actually wow. I don't mean to turn into Owen Wilson, but wow, that's
I love what I
that is a
get.
hell of a
I love you when
that's
I
a
get
hell
a
of a
little bit of a
pull.
Travis Owen Wilson out of that. But yeah, no, I'm just the
Wow.
more that we were talking about it, I'm like, oh yeah, this movie has so much similarity. No wonder I love this movie so much. And maybe I see the patterns, or I see the structures, or see the same sort of internal logic and musing on these like deep, enduring wounds. It's just like the movies that really face into them and find hope and find grace, but also have to wade through the mess. I think that they just really touch me, and so that, they resonate with me. And so thinking about this movie and thinking about Rebel Ridge, I'm like, yeah, the First Blood stuff is there, but maybe it's
There
this.
is, like I said, I not there's a lot of In the Heat of the Night's DNA. And I gotta say, there's a lot of In the Heat of the Night's DNA in a lot of other films. Like I said,
Hell
you can
yeah.
feel it from everything from Silence of the Lambs, to where you have this marginalized figure as the only person that's gonna solve this mystery, solve this crime, partially because of their marginalization. And at the same time, I think a lot of American audiences can be somewhat allergic to films that feel a little too moralizing or a little too lecturing, or at least I can. Like I think there's some walls automatically come up when you're just being given a lesson. It's why Oliver Stone can be so fun, because you're being given a lesson, but also with a heaping helping of cocaine, to get you through it.
Yeah, you have a 10-minute scene with Mr. X, but then you have Tommy Lee Jones painted in gold, you know?
I mean, come on, what's better than that? Not
Nothing.
much, but not much, unless it's Kevin Bacon narrating it in the worst Southern accent you've ever heard. Fascism is coming back. Actually, it is,
That's a movie that
unfortunately.
has an overdose of hell yeah.
Boy, we're going
Joking.
places. We're as per usual, we are going places. We went from In the Heat of the Night to Tommy Lee Jones covered in gold spray paint while banging Joe Pesci and Kevin Bacon in a hothouse Southern orgy. That said, what I love about In the Heat of the Night is that for all the life that it carries, for all the sadness that it carries, for all the darkness that it carries, for all the regret that it carries, for all the lessons that it carries, it does so effortlessly. It does so with no, there's no lead foot nature to it. It's a movie that dances, it moves, it bobs and weaves, and it is first and foremost just a perfect American genre picture. It just happens to be one that investigates and whose primary suspect is America itself, the original sin of America, and where that sin creates a wound, and where that wound bleeds, and where that blood flows, and where that the infection that is in that blood, and tracing it all the way back, and also moving forward and seeing where it goes and how it infects, and how, even unlike the novel, which can be a little preachy, it's a refreshingly, it's a film that finds that even its hero has become infected to some degree, through no fault of his own, but has become so wounded by the behavior you see in this film that even he becomes driven to attack what is unlike himself around him. And viewing race relations sometimes as this spiral never ending, and trusting or desperately hoping that these two men, these two figures at the center of it, this racist white cop and this extremely moral, driven, fixated, obsessive black homicide detective, hoping against hope that somehow desperately these two men will manage to climb out of this vortex that they are in and do something and do one good thing. And to watch that is just incredibly thrilling and exciting, sometimes sad, sometimes heartbreaking, but never less than entertaining. And it is just one of the capital G, capital M great movies that this country has ever produced. And if you have the means, I highly recommend that you order it. I'll be a whore here and say that you can go to, the Imprint Films website and order it. If you live in America,
Look at you doing
I'm
the
gonna do it. I'm
wrap-up
gonna do it.
for
I'm gonna
me.
do it. I'm gonna do the. I'm.
Adam,
Hey, I'm old
hey.
hand. You did the intro. I'll do the outro. You're Virgil. I'm Gillespie. I'm learning from you. I'm learning from your ways. I didn't mean to make. I did not mean to just compare myself to a racist cop. But I will say that
I would never put myself next to the perfection of and grace of Sidney Poitier. Never.
I fucked up. I fucked up there. But I will say that you can get it either from Imprint's website if you're in America, if you're living stateside and you don't want to deal with shipping fees, you can order it from places like Diabolic DVD, who all have a they have deals with Imprint where they will ship Imprint titles stateside. I highly recommend you pick this up. Like I said, it's got a 4K transfer that the other versions of this film do not have, and it is the best looking version of this film. It is the most loaded and packed version of this film, and it is simply one of the best films. It is a hell yeah with some history to it, and you will probably not have a better time at the home movies this year than when you're watching In the Heat of the Night.
Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're crushing morning miles or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.